You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We would need to assess a classification of a war crime is obviously a serious decision to be made. It goes through lawyers, as you noted, and as you well know, Dana, and we would also be working closely with the international community. So I don't have an update on that at this point in time, but there's no question, as you have been reporting through the course of this show, that we're seeing barbaric tactics start to be used. That is horrifying, that is troubling, and we will certainly be looking closely at it.
This is March 1, 2022. That was Jen Psaki in response to a question. Is Putin guilty of war crimes? We're going to get into that in more detail in the second hour. But the allegation is that Putin has used what is called a vacuum bomb, but it's a thermobaric vacuum bomb is the official title. It's kind of a bunker-busting bomb to some extent, but basically what it does is when it hits you, your lungs collapse and then fill with toxic fumes that burn you from inside out. And if that's being used, that's against international treaty. And also that the Russian tanks and artillery and rifles have been firing and hitting apartment buildings. Now, if Ukrainians are placing gun emplacements and ammo inside apartment buildings, they're inviting that kind of attack. That's a very common procedure with the Palestinians against Israel. They'll hide everything inside, something like that. So, well, you're not going to hit us because you'll kill civilians. I don't know what is fact and what's not at this point, but two things are in play. If Putin is indeed using his artillery and his strikes against civilians, not caring, then there is a war crime to be examined. And if they are using the vacuum bombs, yes, there's another reason to discuss war crimes for what's happening. In the meantime, the fighting is continuing. It's 7 minutes after 10 o'clock in Ukraine at this point. So it's dark. And yet at the same time, there are reports of heavy fighting continuing. The Russian troops at last report are stalled north of Kiev, running out of food and gas. I was reminded yesterday by one of my guests, Randy Mayfield, that used to be called Kiev, now it's Kiev. Kiev is the Ukrainian pronunciation, so let me go back to using that pronunciation instead of the Russian, Kiev. We also have air raid sirens blaring at this time across the Ukrainian capital. Diplomats fleeing out of meetings in Geneva with no talks resolved. So we have a lot to cover on those stories and more over the next 2 hours. I'll remind you, we are live streaming at Larry Connors USA YouTube. So if you want to watch the program in progress, here I am for you. And I will admit, I don't try to hide any of my facial expressions when I get into some of these subjects. Live streaming at Larry Connors USA Facebook. We're also going to get into Biden's State of the Union schedule tonight. This is a time for the president to brag about everything he's done. What the hell is he going to brag about? I want to take you back to his first State of the Union. I want you to hear that shortly. And then as you listen to that and you see where we are today and you're thinking, it's more than a joke. We're also going to be joined today by Stephen Bryan. 40 years of experience in government and industry, served as a senior staff director at the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He says it is time for us to engage Russia. By engaging, he's talking about talking directly, doing more than what we see Biden doing. We're going to get more details from him on that. And then we're going to look again at this truckers will be updating them. They've gone pretty much through Missouri into Illinois now. And Saski showing up, of course, without a mask today and being asked directly, what happened to the mask mandate and the science today compared to yesterday? And VP Harris does a big boo-boo. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
For years, I've told you, be well with Wellington, Wellington Environmental. That's because I know the excellent work Wellington does when it comes to making your home, your business, even hospitals safe. See, recently I asked Wellington to check a relative's home. The relative had been constantly sick. Doctors couldn't find a cause. I asked Tom Wellington, please check the house. After extensive testing, Wellington could rule out mold and other air and water toxins. Well, that was a major relief. And the negative results gave doctors added information. So when I encourage you to call Wellington, I mean it. Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, Missouri and Illinois. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
In my discussion with President Xi, I told him, we welcome the competition. We're not looking for conflict. But I made absolutely clear that we will defend America's interest across the board. America will stand up to unfair trade practices that undercut American workers and American industries, like subsidies from state to state-owned operations and enterprises, and the theft of American technology and intellectual property. I also told President Xi that we'll maintain a strong military presence in the Indo-Pacific, just as we do with NATO and Europe, not to start a conflict, but to prevent one.
Well, you heard that was President Biden, his first State of the Union address he gave. And when he gave that, of course, he did not mention Russia. He was dealing with China, talking about how tough I'll be with China. And then we're going to investigate and look into things that are wrong. Yeah, right. Right. Well, you can pick up the Peter Schweitzer book, Caught Red-Handed, and you'll probably find several answers to questions about scandals inside China, possibly involving the Biden family directly. But Biden, in his State of the Union that was given that first time out, keep in mind we were still in the midst of COVID. Many of those who were attending, and there were not that many, they could not seat the entire House like they normally would, the House, the Senate, all members of the Supreme Court, all members of the Cabinet, so forth. So the applause was kind of light, not because they didn't like him and they wanted to applaud him, but that's why it was sounding kind of quiet, because he just could not do it the way they normally have been done at that time. Behind him, Pelosi and Harris were wearing masks so he could take his mask off while he delivered the State of the Union address. That was April 21. And he said, we're not looking for a conflict. This is, again, reference China. We're not looking for one, but if there is one, we'll be there to deal with it. He's got one on his hands right now. The question becomes, is he going to deal with it tonight? We're going to get into that in a lot more detail a little bit later. But let's look back at what Biden was doing within that State of the Union address. And remember, when it came, April 21, he'd been in office now since January. And they delayed it, waiting for maybe a better time to give it with the COVID. But he had already started doing damage. He had already started taking action that he then referred to inside his speech. But some of the action he was taking was already done. And in fact, Senator Dan Sullivan pointed out exactly one of the main things Biden did that is affecting us even today, and especially with what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. Listen.
It's a policy that doesn't make any sense. You know, heck of a first week for President Biden, massive layoffs for hardworking Americans in the energy sector, and then targeting energy production, one of our strengths, one of our great American strengths, that's only going to drive up costs for families, for businesses, and it's going to drive up imports from countries like Venezuela, Russia. So it's a policy that doesn't make sense. And, you know, we're working hard to get the president to realize that he's really damaging not just the economy, but the American worker during a pandemic and a recession. Makes no sense.
Made no sense. That is, again, Senator Dan Sullivan, Republican of Alaska, saying that by shutting down the Keystone Pipeline, by shutting down numerous opportunities to drill, leases, things of that nature, and basically taking us from being an exporter of oil and oil and energy independent to becoming dependent upon Russia. I'm going to spend more time on that in the next hour, but I'll remind you again that just in the last year, from January through November, this nation spent enough money to buy 250 billion barrels of oil from Russia, and we're still doing it. At this very moment, we're probably still buying some because we don't have enough here. And in Europe, they're supposedly going to put in sanctions. They're not going to buy. Well, at what point do you decide, I can't let my people die like this of starvation? They don't have anything, food coming in. They can't go get it. They don't have fuel for their cars, for their transportation. It all started back when Biden took office and said, we're shutting this down. We want to move away from oil and gas and fossil fuels. We'll get into that in more detail in the next hour. But when you hear this clip, I want you to hear from the intent of Biden at that point was very clear in his State of the Union address. The intent was clear. And then when you hear, listen, in this clip of Secretary, I would guess, Energy Czar, Kerry following Biden, and then the Secretary of Energy, Granholm, when you listen to them, you think, what world are they living in?
To start by creating new good-paying jobs, capping those abandoned wells, reclaiming mines, turning old brownfield sites into new hubs of economic growth.
The fastest growing job in the United States before COVID was solar power technician. The same people can do those jobs.
Create more jobs in energy, clean energy, than the jobs that might be sacrificed. But I will say this, we don't want to see any jobs sacrificed.
Yeah, I will say this. We don't want to see any jobs sacrificed, but that's exactly what they were telling them. And Kerry has since stated, we're going to be done with fossil fuel by 2030. While he's flying all around the world in his private jet, emitting more carbons than any group of cars would over a day. But I got to do it. I'm a very important person. I had to get from here to there in a hurry. And commercial flights don't cut it for me. I don't get the special treatment. I don't get this hypocrisy among these people is what goads me more than anything else. And here they were saying, Granholm, in fact, pointing out, the energy secretary, but we don't want to sacrifice any jobs. And Senator Dan Sullivan at that time, and would again today, say, what a stupid statement.
I think you listen to him, you listen to Gina McCarthy, it's condescending, and it's really cavalier, this idea that, hey, you need to make better choices. The Secretary of Energy nominee talks about jobs being sacrificed. First of all, these are really important jobs. These are the men and women in Alaska and America that built our country, energy independence. They have to pay mortgages, they have to pay tuition, and there's this fallacy that somehow a wind turbine technician has the benefits and the pay that somebody, for example, working on the North Slope does. And it's just not the case. I've talked to a lot of our union leaders in the building trades. They completely reject the idea that these jobs are equivalent or that these jobs even exist. So right now you have an administration targeting people, putting them out of work when there's no job to replace their jobs.
That was then, a little over a year ago. We are where we are now because of what they started then. And then came the Russian-Ukraine issue, which has escalated the situation. I'm looking here at a piece. The U.S. and allies now agreeing to release 60 million barrels from their reserves. That being announced today. They're trying to dampen the Russian invasion of Ukraine effect on gas prices at home. Half of that total, 30 million, will come from the U.S. strategic petroleum reserves. The other half from allies in Europe and Asia. That includes Germany, United Kingdom, Italy, the Netherlands, other major countries, Japan, South Korea. They've all agreed to the release to send, quote, a strong message to global oil markets that there will be no shortfall. That is a bunch of BS. Do you really think 60 million barrels are going to take just this country down the road much farther? And if you recall, Biden had released previously from our strategic reserve trying to get the gas prices back under control. Certainly before his State of the Union. Now, when they were writing and preparing the State of the Union address, Russia might have been saber-rattling, but it was still a lot of just a saber-rattling. We'll leave it at that. And, of course, they probably had to take the original number of drafts that they probably wrote, tear all of them up, and refocus because Russia-Ukraine is underway. That also affects the oil and gas issue he probably is going to address. We've already been told, and I know you believe it, right? Yeah, raise your hand if you believe this. Not put your hand down. I know you don't believe it. That the reason the oil and gas prices are going up on you is nothing to do with what Biden's done. It's all Russian-Ukraine. They were going up, my friend, before that happened. The White House, though, still always trying to pass the buck, not to you, just put the blame on you, that the release of these strategic reserves is another example. Partners around the world condemning Russia's unprovoked, unjustified invasion of Ukraine and working together to address the impact of Putin's choice to go to war. Well, the oil market was not impressed. The oil market, the U.S. crude today, spiking 10% today, already this morning. At last check a few moments ago, $105 a barrel. $105. That's the highest level since 2014. Brent crude, which is considered the world benchmark, soaring about 8% to $105.40. A managing director of Global Energy Strategy says the bottom line is this is not enough to cool off the market. It's a bit of a Band-Aid solution. You don't have to be an oil expert and economist to know that's not going to do it. And, of course, the speech is, Jen Psaki admitted today, it will be addressing Ukraine. It damn well better. Here we go.
He will definitely spend time in the speech talking about the conflict in Ukraine, his efforts to rally the world, to lead the world in responding to and standing up to autocratic leadership and the offensive and horrific actions of President Putin. But what people will also hear from him for a great deal of the speech is his plan, not only the progress we've made a lot of economic progress, but his commitment to addressing prices, addressing costs, addressing inflation. And that will be part of what he talks about this evening in the speech.
Yeah. Roll it all in. Ukraine, all this, and of course you're going to talk about we're done with COVID. I know they're going to wave the COVID flag. Look here. No mask. We're done. I told you they'd be done before they got to the November elections. This is an opportunity for a president to brag on what he's doing in the nation. This is Biden's opportunity to brag. Senator Ted Cruz says, what the hell are you going to brag about?
I got to say, Larry, you would think that just out of dumb luck, they could have gotten some policy right. But between spending and debt and inflation, between the chaos at our southern border, between abusive and illegal vaccine mandates, between radicals on the courts, and then you look abroad to disastrous foreign policy, they have managed to screw up every single policy issue on the plate. And I got to say, the American people are really paying the price for the radical extremism that sadly has taken over the Democratic Party.
Right. Stand by for some remarks from Tucker Carlson.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
No sane American approves of what Russia has done in Ukraine. We certainly don't, and we don't know anyone who does. On Twitter, you see Democrats pretending that their political opponents are responsible for the invasion and somehow support it. So Joe Biden and his staff so mismanaged the world that Vladimir Putin invades Ukraine after Biden told us for months he could prevent that from happening, and yet all of it is your fault. We're moving down a path that could result in the destruction of the United States. Americans may be mad at Putin, understandably, but they're wary of where our leaders are taking this next. A new CNN poll, for example, shows a strong majority of Americans, speaking of democracy, opposes direct military action against Russia. Are they all traitors? Are they all pro-Putin? Probably not. At the very least, they would like, and we could use, a sober national conversation about the potential consequences of where people like Richard Haass are taking us now. The moment that Russian troops rolled across the border into Ukraine, Democrats wasted no time in attacking not just Putin, but their political opponents in this country. What did they have to do with it? Isn't war the moment for unity? We're all in this together. But they leveraged this war and the human suffering that it inevitably entails to make partisan points.
Partisan points. Tucker Carlson and his monologue last night. Before we wrap up this hour, the New York Times special person, the one that created the 1619 Project, is doing the same damn thing, only she's also linking it to racism. Well, I know we're talking about all Europeans. They're all white, Russians and Ukrainians. They're all white, but she's finding a way to make that work. I'll get to that for you later. You heard Carlson mention this CNN survey. 62% of Americans think the U.S. should do more to stop the Russian military actions. 38% think we've already done enough. But when you're asking those respondents who favor or oppose U.S. taking direct military action, if economic sanctions don't work, only 42% said they favor action. A majority said no military action. To that extent, President Biden is stating again, we're not going to set up a no-fly zone over Ukraine. His belief is that if we do so, that means that U.S. forces are directly involved in Ukraine, even if it's over the skies, and that would escalate things. That might be a wise decision. We'll have to agree that that's probably good at this point. Now, he just left a few minutes ago. He finished a 30-minute phone call with Zelensky. And apparently they spoke about various sanctions, other assistance. And Zelensky said they did talk about American leadership. You're talking the wrong guy. You're talking the wrong guy in the White House when you're talking about American leadership. In fact, there's nobody in the White House that can answer any of your questions or concerns. But anyway, Zelensky said, we discussed American leadership on anti-Russian sanctions and defense assistance to Ukraine. And they also discussed attacks on areas occupied by Ukrainian citizens, including close to a Holocaust memorial. There's a story of one woman who was running out of the area fearing she was going to die. We already talked to you in the opening monologue. There are reports they're using in some areas vacuum bombs, basically that suck all the air out of your lungs when they explode and then fill your lungs with poisonous gases, fiery gases that burn you from inside out, a painful death. That would be a war crime. We are going to get into that in more detail in the second hour. But coming up, a guy with 40 years of experience, a lot of it with U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee and other affairs, Stephen Bryan, we've had him on before, and he says it's time for us to engage with Russia. By engage, what does he mean? Stand by, please. Ackerman Toyota believes when you need service, you want genuine parts, certified mechanics, no hidden cost. You get all of that with Ackerman Toyota. Plus, if you're ready for a new car or pre-owned, see what Ackerman has on the lot or what's coming. Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. Reminding you, we are live streaming at Larry Connors USA YouTube. Larry Connors USA YouTube, if you want to look in on the program, add some comments. I'm watching those comments come in. Also on some of our other sources, Larry Connors USA Facebook, LarryConnorsUSA.com, LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. I mean, we're everywhere. And we thank you for listening and adding your comments and encouraging others. My guest we've had on before and always enjoy having him, expert in so many factors when it comes to military action in particular, Stephen Bryan, with 40 years of experience in government and industry, was a senior staff member one time, U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Stephen, glad to have you back with us, sir.
Nice to be with you.
Well, you had a piece that you wrote. You've had several pieces, but this is the latest. In fact, you and I booked this speech before, I mean this interview prior to this one coming out, that basically is titled Time to Engage the Russians. And of course, when you hear engage the Russians, everyone's first question is, in what way? With weapons, boots on the ground, what?
No, negotiations.
So when negotiations, why do you think it's time to do it now, when everything I'm seeing coming out of Kyiv, and I'm going to go with the Ukrainian pronunciation, Kyiv, that they're continuing to be hit even as we speak right now around 10:40 at night?
Well, they're having a very tough time there. You know that. I mean, everyone knows that. It's really awful. And what the Russians are doing is really awful. I have no excuses for them. I think the problem is twofold. The first is we somehow this Ukraine thing has to be settled on a decent basis. This war is taking too many lives, and it's destroying the country. And even if they survive it, it's going to take them years to fix it up. So, and you never can put back the people who die.
No.
So that's one reason. And the second reason, I think, is that the Europe has all of a sudden become unstable, that the Russians consider Europe a threat to them, and they're threatening Europe, and it's a very bad situation. The security framework in Europe has deteriorated. Maybe it's fallen apart. I'm not sure. And it's time to sit down with the Russians and sort it out if we can. I don't know that we can, but I think we have to make the effort.
You mentioned some things worsening. Condoleezza Rice, former U.S. Secretary of State, also French President Macron, have both said that they see a different man in Putin than they've had in the past. Macron has seen him face-to-face more recently, trying to start some negotiations. Yeah. Condoleezza Rice talking about back during the time she was Secretary of State, but says he seems to be more erratic, that maybe, what is it, an ego thing or something else? Is there more in play here with the man himself that is in turn leading to this violence?
You know, I really can't perfectly answer that. If I could, you know, I'd be happy to try. But I read his speeches and watched him perform most recently. And, you know, it wasn't altogether coherent. I'll be, you know, blunt about it. It was very loosely stated, sloppy, somewhat incoherent, confused at some points, made claims of work.
I'm not sure of his age. I hadn't thought to think about checking it because he looks to be in great physical shape. Now, is there a comparison with him and Biden? And, of course, a lot of the remarks I was just saying about being unhinged. Somebody had stated he looked to be unhinged. Those guys think they were thrown at Trump in the past.
I think the Russians, if I read it right, and this is just me speaking, of course, but if I read it right, I think that he felt he was being given the back of the hand by the United States and by NATO and by the Europeans, and he wasn't being treated as an equal.
It's a personal affront. It was a personal affront.
Personal, but also, you know, insulting Russia from his point of view, because he thinks he embodies Russia.
We have China urging them to negotiate. China's been kind of sitting on the line. Germany was sitting on the line, but now has decided, okay, despite we want that oil and gas reserve through the under the sea, Baltic Sea, we're going to get engaged with dealing with them at this point. What's going to bring them to the table?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of things. I mean, first of all, the economy in Russia has gone to trash. These sanctions have had an impact. The ruble has fallen through the floor. They've suspended their stock market. They can't sell or trade anything. I mean, so it's very negative from that point of view. But the biggest thing of all, in my opinion, are the casualties. There are already reportedly, and we don't have any hard numbers, but reportedly, 5,000 Russians killed in Ukraine.
Right. There's
in the whole Afghan war, they lost 10,000.
Yeah.
And that brought down, that helped bring down the Soviet Union.
And that was years of war. Yeah. Now, there are reports and satellite video of something like 40 miles of vehicles.
This is a short period, 2 days.
Right. Yeah, there are satellite videos of 40 miles of military vehicles still moving toward Kyiv, but they've stalled out. We don't know logistics. We don't know if they don't have fuel or they've been given a hold. I mean, if you cannot keep, General Patton knew that, if you don't keep your logistics supplies, as you well know too, with your troops, you don't have anything.
That's right. I don't know the answer to that. I've seen the reports. Another possible reason is that there's a second negotiation tomorrow between Russia and Ukraine. I think it's going to take place in Belarus. So if that comes off, I think that it's not a ceasefire, but it's a less, what can I say, they stopped moving, at least. And you could argue that that's what we're seeing. I'm not sure.
You're listening, Stephen.
It could be logistics, too.
You're listening to Stephen Bryan, author of numerous books, 40 years of experience in government industry, also at one time senior staff director of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. a question being raised today. If they have been shelling apartment units, residences, and so forth, and they're doing it simply because they're there, not because Ukrainians have set up their own facilities inside thinking that they won't be hit, that and also the vacuum bomb being used, if that is in fact being used, has been. Do we have...
The thermobaric weapon was used, yes.
You've heard for sure it has been, right? And the thermobaric basically is what takes all the air out of your lungs and replaces it with a fiery gas and burns you from inside out.
More or less, if you're in the way of it, yes.
Just disintegrate you. That's a war crime. That's against Geneva Convention, is it not?
Well, unfortunately, thermobaric weapons are not banned by the Geneva Convention.
Because they did exist.
But that doesn't
obviously.
Mean there are
yeah.
any.
Right.
Well, it didn't exist at the time. That's
right.
True. But no one is, you know, like cluster bombs. You know, there are some agreements on cluster bombs, but those too aren't banned. Even the U.S. was against having them banned. So it's tricky waters, but that's from a legal point of view. But from a human and moral point of view, it's wrong.
You also mentioned, you know, how things are going to worsen inside Russia. Do you see, it's almost a replay for those who have studied in the past of how Hitler was continuing to make decisions and his generals really were not that sold on it and looking for ways to, we got to put a stop to this, it's unwinnable, this is going to be bad for us, even plotting a murder attempt against him, not just a coup, but to take him out fully with a bomb under a desk that got moved at the last minute. Do you suspect something like that might be in play?
You know, again, there's been a lot of speculation like that, that the people are unhappy, that the military is unhappy, the nomenclatura, the bureaucrats in Moscow are unhappy. But, you know, I don't know that it means a coup or not. I can't really say.
If it comes down to... I'm sorry.
I think Putin has to worry about that.
Right.
That's for sure.
That was my next... That's actually the next part of the question, that if he begins to think that might happen, that maybe he'll say, okay, let's cease and desist because I don't want to lose the power I do have in my country. But I don't think
that's going to be it. I mean,
yeah.
I think that right now we have to think about satisfying the whatever demands he has that are reasonable and not the ones that are not reasonable. And we need to, you know, the Ukrainians have to make a deal on the two breakaway areas in Donetsk, the Donetsk Republic and Luhansk
right.
Republic. That's already provided for anyway under the Minsk Accords. Yeah,
you brought that up the first last. You brought those up the last time, and apparently they've been ignored.
That's right.
That's right. You brought them up for our audience that didn't know about the breakaway. They've already had fighting inside Ukraine with Russian equipment against them by many who are still holding Russian passports. One quick response here. Pompeo, former Secretary of State, said we need to be fearless and using the economic power. Otherwise, there's going to be a cascading set of calamities around the world. You hinted to that a moment ago.
Yes. I mean, I think I'm very worried about Eastern Europe and about this thing spreading. And unless we can reach an accommodation that quiets it down, we're not going to make any progress. There are issues. The Russians say they're worried about us putting nuclear weapons in
right.
Eastern Europe.
Sure.
And
we have to be worried about that, too. Stephen, I want to thank you. I'm sorry, we're up against
right.
a hard break, but I want to thank you very much for your time, as always, sir. Stephen Bryan.
My pleasure. Take care.
We'll be right back.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So I've got a question being raised by one of our viewers right now and saying, let me find it again here. He's saying, Brian saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this the first year the address to Congress after a new president takes office, not called the State of the Union, but instead presidential address to Congress? It's called both. CNN is even referring to it as the State of the Union, so a matter of semantics, but I hear what you're saying. You know, the left-wing New York Times reporter and creator of the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah-Jones, has now been basically accusing reporters of, you're not admitting to your bias, and stop pretending we have objectivity and acknowledge our bias when we write about what's happening in Ukraine with Russia. She called the European continent a geopolitical fiction intended to separate from Asia. And then she goes on to talk about Ukrainians being invaded is worthy of concern, but because they appear white, maybe not that big of a deal. Is that what she's trying to say? Boy, did she get some pushback. Fox News contributor Leo Terrell wrote, the world is dealing with a madman and she wants to play the race card. Shameful. Leo Terrell is a black man, as you would probably know from Fox News. He also said the New York Times journalist suggesting media concern for Russian invasion of Ukraine demonstrates racial biases. I'm looking at some other comments that have been coming in. One journalist wrote, pretty sure the reason why we care is not because we're all white evil supremacists who only care about blonde Slavic people, but because Putin nuking someone would be bad. Another one saying she sees everything in race. She has no clue the Russians and Ukrainians are the same racially. Another one said, and this sums it up, must be exhausting in life to make everything about race. Not so much for her. She thrives on it. Now, here is a little bit of a shocker. Whether you want to call it the president's address to Congress or the State of the Union, Democrats are peeved because there are going to be some rebuttals to Biden's State of the Union address tonight from other Democrats. Yes, normally you have the opposing party get some time. Well, this time they're also going to have Representative Tlaib, Democrat, Minnesota. She is, of course, one of those squad members, a leader of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, holding a lot of power and trying to influence all this time, Nancy Pelosi, who, thank God, will be gone after 2022 if you get out there and vote like you're supposed to. Not only is she going to do that, you're going to have Congressman Allred, Democrat of Texas, speaking for the Congressional Black Caucus. Then Congressman Vella, Democrat of Texas, saying that Democrats should be showing unity behind the president. We should all do that. But three speeches in one night, all from Democrats, does suggest a lot of failings of this current president. But let's just deal with Tlaib for a moment. Representative Gottheimer, Democrat of New Jersey, is so upset that Tlaib is going to be given time to make a response to Biden's speech. You know how upset he is? He said, and I think this is a perfect analogy. It's like keying your own car, slashing your own tires. Yep, that's it. Keying your own car, slashing your own tires, and therefore you basically are destroying what you're trying to do. So Biden's going to spend all this time up there, and then suddenly they're going to come up and basically either rebut him or tear down what he tried to build up. As I said earlier, this is supposed to be a time for a president to brag. Look what we've done. This time it might be a time to whisper. Look what we've done. Isn't it great? I mean, when he starts those little whispers like that, I have to admit, it sends chills down my spine. I don't know about you. All right, again, reminding you, we are broadcasting and live streaming at Larry Connors USA. YouTube direct, Larry Connors USA YouTube. We are live streaming. You're welcome to join. Post some comments there or at any other locations. I try to monitor all of them for you. We got another hour coming up. Make sure you contact friends and neighbors. Let them know we're on the air so they don't miss it. And we'll update the convoy now in Illinois. We'll bring you up to speed on that. I've got a listener who's over there kind of watching and been talking to some of the folks as the trucks went by. And we're also going to get into what can he possibly brag about tonight. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.